My name is Owen Flynn, and welcome to episode 122 of the Trail Running Ireland podcast, sponsored by New Leaf Online Health Store. In this week's show, we Rene Borg from Running Coach Ireland for our annual Dublin Marathon special as we chat through the lessons learned from our two Dublin Marathon squads for this year's race, such as best practices in our marathon training, best recovery tools, and the important skill sets needed to train for and run a successful marathon. Everyone, get your running gear on. Let's go. Hey guys, how's it going? And before we get into our Dublin Marathon chat, a big thank you to our sponsor this month, New Leaf Online Health Store, owned by Imra runner and 171 kilometer UTMB finisher, Mairead O'Keefe. And Mairead and the team at New Leaf have set up a 10% discount code for all of our podcast listeners. So if you want to stock up on some recovery nutrition post Dublin Marathon or try any of the top endurance nutrition brands that they have, such as Knack or Tailwind for next year's big races, or even need advice on supplements, do pop over to newleafonline.ie, use the code FUELUP, lowercase or uppercase, and you'll get 10% off and be supporting an Irish business and an Irish mountain runner in Mairead as well. Before we call in Rennie for our Dublin Marathon chat, a big thank you also to our group of Patreons who support the show each month, many of whom have been doing so for a long time now. Thanks a million, guys. And if you are listening and like what we do, do pop over to Patreon, Trail Running Ireland, and even a small donation will help keep the podcast on the airwaves all year long. Okay, let's dial in Rene and chat all things marathon training and Dublin Marathon on this very, very special weekend in the lead up to the big day this coming Sunday. Rene Borg from Running Coach Ireland. Rene, we are back for another year of our Dublin Marathon special. I cannot wait to see all the guys in the squad, in the two squads, run on Sunday. And hopefully everybody will have an awful lot of fun and get those good times that they've all been working so hard for over the last couple of months. And even beyond that as well, friends.
Yes, yes, thank you, Owen, as well. It's the same marathon, but different lessons every year. And, you know, some of them are the same lessons, I think it's fair to say as well. But I think you and I were jotting down a few notes before this call, you especially, Owen, because in fairness, you work with, I think, by far the majority of our marathon runners by now. I think I have some club runners, my wife, and six or seven clients I have running it. But, you know, you have much more than that, I think. But we both noticed that the common theme was that real life meets the marathon is a good headline for this podcast, you know, which is that balance between your training, your lifestyle, and the recovery rhythm. Because with a marathon, it's just much, much easier to reach the limits of that, you know. And I think we saw that in the training build-up, and I think it'll drive a good few of the tips we'd like people to take away here. And I think they are generic enough that they also make a lot of sense for our, you know, our main audience, which is the trail runners.
Yeah, and the thing about this particular Dublin Marathon special, Rene, I want us to be a little bit different than maybe some of the other podcasts that might be out and available this week, where they'll talk about tips for race day and how to pace it, how to get your nutrition right, your hydration right, and the build-up over the next 24, 48 hours, where hopefully our conversation, Rene, today, we'll share maybe some of the observations, as you said, some of the lessons learned from our two squads over the last couple of months that people can not apply on Sunday, because everybody has their pacing strategy hopefully nailed on for Sunday. But lessons learned that people can take away for their next marathon, or indeed for our trail runners that listen in, their next big run on the mountains. And as you were just touching on there, maybe the first observation that we made is that I think one of the guys that I lost along the way, Rennie, one of the very few guys that I lost along the way, in fairness, was great lad Paul, but just very, very busy life. Hotel manager, you know, couple of small kids. And we had a chat about maybe 7 or 8 weeks ago now, and just the marathon training, it wasn't happening because he just didn't have the time. Some weeks didn't have the energy maybe as well to get the big long runs in, especially the big long runs in at the weekend. And then, you know, you're maybe missing 1 or 2 days during the week, which are very, very important for recovery and that aerobic build. So the lesson there was that we can all take that when we're setting a target, whether it's Dublin Marathon 2026 or whether it's, you know, UTMB next August or whatever it might be, a Morris Mullins, that we need to make sure that what's going on around us in life won't be a disenabler, won't affect our build up and ultimately our race day. And sometimes, Jenny, we have to be brave, don't we? And you know, be truthful with ourselves and say, oh, listen, if I just got a promotion in a new job, or if I have, you know, two small twins or whatever it might be, that maybe now isn't the right time to make that call, to sign up for the ultra or to sign up for the marathon, whatever it might be.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's because it's obviously what happens, you know, you have to have enough room in your life to be able to run, recover, and then repeat that at a very good level of consistency for an extended period of time. You know, the longer, the better. And if any of those things aren't in line, then even weeks that, you know, we might have scheduled as easy weeks can suddenly become very hard. And I saw the same as you, Owen, you know, this time in this build up once, but over the years, quite a few times where either people, they very clearly said to me, look, if I don't make it this time, you know, I can't just pick another one because my wife is, or my husband or whatever, is already, they're getting on my back about it. And I can't extend it like this. It's now or never. And similarly, where people told me, look, I've done this now, but I'm not going to be able to do another one because I have a new big job coming up, or, you know, maybe they have their first child, you know, or something like that. And I've kind of seen it, you know, right at the front line in this build of own, because I've been coaching my own wife for her marathon. And, you know, for many, many years, obviously our children were very small and it just wouldn't have been possible at all. And I think, you know, she, like most other people, made an assessment that not only was she interested in the goal again after many years, but she felt the life could just about support it. And what I would say is, yeah, definitely, you know, still with the life situation we have, you know, and I don't think ours is the worst in the world at all, but, you know, it just about could hold, I would say. And it required, you know, a lot of discipline, obviously, and focus and work on her part. And she's obviously no different, you know, than anybody else who deals with that. So you have to be really, you know, she had done it before, which helps, because, you know, if you've done it before, even if it's many years ago, you remember what it takes. And even if someone sits you down and tells you what's required, you know, it's not the same as knowing it. So you definitely, one of the first conversations you need to have with yourself and with your coach, if you have one, is like, realistically, for this to be a positive experience for me, and looking at what I've told you, honestly, about my life, do you think it actually, I'll get out of it what I want to get out of it?
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, maybe when you have signed up, but then all of a sudden that you realize actually this isn't working. Like, yes, sometimes you do need to abandon ship, like Paul there, because it just wasn't working out. But sometimes as well, Rennie, you know, if you have, again, the bravery to do it, you can maybe leave the ego aside and instead of going for the PB, go for 10 minutes slower. And still try and have an enjoyable day. For example, I've got John in the squad, who is a very busy doctor, and he also just had a new little baby as well. John had a PB run in Manchester earlier this year, 3:45, and he was hoping to push on to the mid 3:30s. But, you know, little baby has come along. You know, he still needs to go to work. So between new little baby, couple of other kids, busy job, but he's still hanging in there. He's still getting the runs done as well as he can. So maybe instead of that PB this time, we just try and get as close to the Manchester time as we can. And he has a good positive experience. And to be honest, Rennie, even with myself, you know, Dublin Marathon, it's my favourite race. I love to do it every year. But I know that just some years, this year, for example, It's just the whatever it is. It's the bandwidth. It's the energy levels. It's the training and life, etc. Not every year I can do it, and I've been running Rennie about 21 years, and I've completed five marathons and just missed out on two. One time I got sick with just a bad cold the day before. Another time I tore an abductor about 2 or 3 weeks before. So seven marathon attempts in 21 years. So that's for me, Rennie, once every 3 years. I would have loved to have done one every year, one every second year, but sometimes life just didn't allow for that. I don't know what's your hit rate, Rennie, especially in those early years. I know you've moved on to the mountains a lot over the last decade or so, but in the early years, Rennie, how many did you get done?
Well, for me, it was a really fleeting thing on because I did just two. I did the first one, which was excellent. I got everything I wanted out of it, and I felt it was so easy. And then I said, look, I don't want to go straight back to it because I don't feel I'm fully developed as a runner. As I say, I was out that day to run 320. I ran 318,
Okay,
and then
good,
I
good.
felt there was a lot of other things I really wanted to do and that interested me more. And I had a few injuries those 5 years as well, but generally I raced a lot. So by the time I actually let the process come to me, Owen, if that makes sense, that I had a really good period of training, and I just felt, look, I think I'm doing really well. I've got many years of base now. I think this would be a good time to do another. And then I committed to it, and I had the best build-up in my whole life. And the only thing that was really wrong, there's a few things looking back, of course, but the only thing that was really wrong is we ended up running on a day where it was 25 degrees, and that took probably 5 minutes off my time, I think. But it was still, a very good time for me and for my potential. So I was very, very happy, and I hadn't even had time after that to consider, would I go back and do another one, or would I go again, and focus because there's so many things to do in running. So, and then I got I got a chronic bone spur problem that took me about 5 years to resolve. So by the time I came back from that, I had moved on in the way that I could see that my life had moved on, and I look back at the training that I needed to run the 255 that I ended up running, and I could see I couldn't do that training. It didn't fit in my life. There was too much stress. So I let it go then, Owen. But I've always said to myself that if the stars ever aligned again, and I felt like there was time in my life and that the capacity was there to do something similar, I would go for it again. But I'm a little bit, I'm not one of the, there's a lot of people I can see who really enjoy it just for the spectacle. And I am a fortunate lot like that, right? I like it for the goal. And maybe when if I went back as an older athlete with less expectations, I would change my mind. But I think it's easier then because then you can do exactly what you just said. And I did actually had that conversation with a few of my own clients in this build-up because there was a few things going on with them, as you alluded to there. And they were very good actually at sitting down with me and understanding that we can still really make this a great day, but we have to tailor the expectations. You can't go out and run the PB you ran 3 years ago. So if you have that good, healthy, flexible attitude, you can obviously run a lot more marathons, right? But I wasn't willing to run it unless it was perfect. So that really limited the number I did, right? So there you go.
No, listen, and I mean, what I'm getting from the two of us talking about how hard it can be to align all the stars, as you said, it's what I've been saying to the guys over the last couple of days. If you're injury free, if you've no cold or flu, and if the week is going fairly stress free for you, that is priceless, Rennie, because as the two of us have experienced in our own running careers, it is hard to get that perfect 4 months, in the build up and to make the commitment to it. So for anybody that's listening, on Friday or Saturday, or maybe driving in the car on Sunday morning, if you are fit and healthy, and if the 4 months have gone more or less okay for you, this is gold. Get ready to perform and execute, and get ready for to raise your hands as you cross that line so you get that special moment captured and you can stick a photograph up on your shelf in your living room, because it is hard. And 22,500 people have signed up for this race, and maybe only what 18,500 might actually finish it. So Very, very special if you are fit and healthy. Our second point, Rennie, that we wanted to talk about was, and this is a great one, the half marathon debate in the build up to the marathon. And again, we can apply this to a trail race as well. If you're doing a big long trail race, do you race a shorter distance 5 to 7 weeks out? But we might just focus on the half marathon on the roads, Rennie, for this segment. And the reason why I brought this one up, Rennie, was because I had one of my lads, Usheen, really talented runner, going for 2:40-ish, let's say, minute or two either side of 2:40, about, 6 weeks ago now, ran a super PB time, an hour 16. But he's just noticed that ever since then, the same bounce hasn't been in the legs. And I totally get it, Usheen, and for the rest of my squad, because I do think sometimes, maybe when you're an elite runner, when you're young, you know, when you don't have maybe some of the other life pressures that the older guys in the squad might have, like kids and so on, depending on your job, of course, as well. When you're robust and young, maybe you can get away with that PB. But I think, Rennie, actually for the majority of us, and for the majority of the squad, Rennie, when it came to the Frank Duffy 10-miler and the half marathon options in Ratota in the park, I had everybody run them at marathon pace. I mean, they all had a great time. They all had a really positive experience. They all nailed their marathon pace for the 13 miles. I'm sure they were a little bit tired for a couple of days, a week or so. But certainly within 7 to 8 days, within 10 days, they were back to their normal selves, which I think is so important. And it just, sure, you might get a confidence boost when you run the half marathon PB, but there's a price to it, isn't there?
There is, and especially because, you know, ultimately how many kind of races you can have in a build-up is very athlete dependent, in the sense that, you know, the bigger your aerobic house and your conditioning over the years and a few other factors, you know, the more you can actually do and you can get away with it, right? And that's why you will see a few people, and this is obviously often what people look at, you know, the top of the iceberg. You know, they look at a few people who are just doing loads of races and doing great, and they also rock up on marathon day and they also do great, you know. Although, of course, when you look at that, you never know, would they've done even better, you know, without, because that's not a question you can answer, because you can't rerun time exactly the same way. But for most of the people we work with, which, as I say, is they're often at a slightly later stage in their life, where it's recovery after workouts is usually one of the, as we said there earlier, one of the main problems. And then it's usually the kind of risk reward between doing lots of races in your marathon build up, or just really using them as time trial, you know, at race rhythms, a little bit faster, mm-hmm. a little bit slower, or, you know, where you keep control, you don't redline. That stops that risk of basically being not quite yourself for 2 or 3 weeks after. And that especially yeah. happens once you get up to the half marathon distance. You can get away. It's a little bit easier in the shorter distance, because even if you do a 5K all out, on paper, that can unbalance your aerobic system, you know, in the wrong direction. But it's still, it's a fairly short race. You can often get over that and rebalance it fairly quickly. But an all-out half marathon is sometimes harder, you know, and what it might do is it might hurt your training quality for several weeks after.
Yeah.
You know, so it's about intent. I think you were saying there, Owen, that, you know, there are tune-ups for the marathon, because the marathon is so important that you can't be treating it unless that's what you want to do. Okay, if you're a member of the Marathon Club Ireland and, you know, you do 300 marathons a year or something, then I know it's a little bit different. But for most of the people who chase that and where, you know, they really want that day to go right, you have to be able to subordinate the other races, you know, that they're only there to develop you towards it. Nothing else. And that's actually an experience I did have firsthand, Owen, because I don't like to look at my own experience when I design a training program and say, well, because this worked for me, you should also do this, and this didn't work, so you should not do that. I don't think that's a good way to coach, but I do think you can look at your own, when you look at your own experiences and you try and pass that knowledge onto other people, you have to look at the principle, you know. So for instance, in that build-up I alluded to, there were a few things that didn't go right. I did a lot of races, Owen, in the middle of that plan. And I think, you want to talk about the middle of the plan, I think it's fine a bit later. Because I was knocking off one PB after the other. So I got into this mindset, look, you have to make hay while the sun shines. I just wanted all the PBs, and I pretty much got all the distances sorted.
Yeah, okay.
And in the beginning, that was great because I had trained so much that my work capacity was so high that I could go do a 5K all out and then I could go run 8K straight after, and it felt like I hadn't done anything. You know, it was just absolutely tireless. And that worked fine until towards two-thirds into the program. And then I did start to notice, okay, now I have to drop the volume a little bit to keep up with this. And I do think that if I had maybe dropped the last one or two of those races and kept the volume a little bit higher instead, I would have felt slightly better on the actual day. I still did well, but it was actually of the last few races, the one where I felt the least pep. Right now, you could say you have to be careful when you conclude, as I say, one, because the individual experience, also there are always other factors, right? You know, of course I mentioned heat, and you also, I traveled, which is a different topic for marathoners. The Dublin Marathon, thank God you don't have that. You know, all you have to deal with is the early Lewis, the early Dart, you know, finding and walking into your wave from the right position, all this. So there's always multiple things, but the principle is clearly that the more work you've done consistently, the more room you have to do a few races and recover quickly. But you need to be really aware that it doesn't drop the quality of your average training until the taper. In the taper, it's okay. But until then, that's what you really need to protect, because it's that average volume and the specific marathon workouts, which we'll talk about as well, they are what make the big difference. It's not those tune-up races. You know, nice as it is, it gives a great confidence to, you know, knock off a great half marathon. But if it then knocks out 2 or 3 weeks of your training after, you know, where maybe you're running 70% of what you had planned, that confidence is probably not worth the trade-off of fitness.
A good little trick that I did with some of the guys running this particular block was lots of them actually ran a 5K at the end of July, start of August, just before we kind of really got stuck into our marathon build-up. And that worked a treat because, you know, a lot of guys. In that July, August period, they were doing their 5K, 10K speed work before we got to our marathon prep work. And, you know, they got their PB first week in August, last week in July. And that's enough to keep them going until now. And it must be a great feeling if you haven't raced and if you haven't gone to the well, because at the end of the day, there's probably only, as we get older into our late 30s, 40s, 50s, there's probably only one or two times a year when we can really go to the well. And we want to save that card for this Sunday. And it must be a great feeling, I was going to say, that if you haven't raced maybe since July, August, you have all this energy ready to go. And even say one or two of the guys wanted to do the three-quarter marathons. And I know they do work for some people. It's a lovely chance to get an organized 31, 32 kilometers in. But for my guys in the squad, I try and make them avoid it. And if they do it, it's strictly at marathon pace, even a little bit less. Because again, if you sign up for a race like that, you have to do the 32 kilometers on that time, on that day, regardless of the weather, regardless of the week that you've had. Where when we're doing our own long runs, Rennie, instead of a race environment, there's not as much energy or adrenaline. Because you're doing it out your front door and back in your front door, as opposed to going to a big, crowded environment where everybody's a bit nervous and anxious and energy levels are high. And then what I was going to say was then, if you are doing a long run, you can do it on the Saturday or on the Sunday, or even sometimes on the Monday. Sometimes, you know, maybe the guys were having a bad weekend and we said, listen, you know what? Do you have time on the Monday? Let's do that long run on the Monday. So when you remove yourself from that race environment, you just have a lot more freedom to do those long runs. You control energy levels, you control pace, and that again just reduces injury risk. And thankfully, Rennie, the guys in the squad, I'm just going through it now. And apart from one or two little small niggles, the full squad is fit and healthy this year. I think one guy maybe back in August had an issue and he had to drop out. But everybody else that has got through August and September, October, everybody is injury free. And I put that down to Rennie not racing as much and controlling our training. You know, I'm sure it's the same for you guys as well, your guys as well.
Like as you say, train don't strain is the basic philosophy, right? That we preach from, you know, from that line from Lydiard. And it's because obviously racing, it's very hard not to strain when you race, especially because there's that combination, as you say, with marathon training, that you're under pressure to get training in, especially long runs, And it's just a bad combination when most races happens in weekends, you know, because you kind of have to sacrifice the quality of your long run unless you're an absolute beast, you know, who can, as I say, who can race on a Saturday, and then you can bang out a good long run the next day. You know, for a lot of people, that's really hard to do. And even if they get away with it, they don't always get away with it for very long, because you do then go out on that long run with a body that's a bit damaged, you know. So, you know, it's like rolling the dice, the injury dice, a few more times. So what you're talking about, I think, is just risk minimization to protect the three biggest correlators with marathon success, which is, as we know, volume. It is the average length of your 8 to 10 longest long runs, and it's the amount of time you spend running close to marathon pace. They are the three things. So if you said they are the three things you need to protect. So if you can do those three things, you know, and you can do a few other things as well without hurting them, fine. But if you find, maybe from previous experience, and this is something I found with races in general as I got older, is it was hard to combine weekend races with good long runs. Whereas when I was younger, I found it easier. You know, there was ways I could do both. As I found back then, either if I just ran zone one for the long run the next day, it was fine, no problem. Or if you had a long race with a really long warm up and cool down, that became like a quality long run, if you know what I mean. So that basically that took the slot. But that was the only way to do it where you could fulfill all those criteria. And that means then, as you change your situation, because often we talk about we change, you know, so if, but often it's our situation that changes more than just our bodies, you know, that we just don't have that recovery space in our lives anymore. And that's what then you do need to, because I actually saw exact example you talked about there quite a lot the last 4 weeks, especially where there was a little bit of illness, Owen, and you know, people had a few things going on where they missed the run in the weekend, and it's just that then we needed to, or it was usually either having to move Sunday to Saturday, Saturday to Sunday, or the weekend to Monday, as you said. That's a really, really common thing. So that is easier, as you say, if you don't have much else, because you can really tent pole your whole week and say, well, look, there's going to be a long run, and there's probably going to be some kind of steady run, like quality steady, and everything else is filler. So that you're making your life quite easy then, because get those two tent poles and then fill in all the space in between, and you're done and dusted.
Let's move on, Manny, to our segment three, which is our third observation, if you like, about the athletes that follow the plan, who tend to do very, very well. But then we always have kind of one or two athletes who want to fight it, who are always asking for more miles, longer runs, and they have good intentions. They're feeling strong, they're feeling confident, and they want to push on. But I don't know about your own guys, Rennie. I think it's more or less the same as my philosophy that the max really that I allow my guys to do is about 2 hours 25 at a push, 2.5 hours. And that's probably once at a push twice. And the rest of the runs, they might hover between 2 hours and 2 hours 15, but every weekend. You know, for the last 8 or 9 weeks, every weekend, we're more or less at 2 hours plus. And I think that formula works a treat. But when we have a few rogue operatives that go a bit longer or do it a bit too quick, that's when we see maybe on the Tuesday or the Wednesday, oh, the ankle's a bit sore here today. Oh, I wonder why. Oh, it's because, yeah, you jumped too far. And I know there's probably other coaching groups out there, Rennie, and every coach has their own philosophy, and we're not saying either one is right or wrong. But I think there are a lot of coaching groups and indeed a lot of athletes who prepare the marathon on their own that personally, I think they go too far and they might go out the full 3 hours and regularly go out to 2 hours 50, regularly go out to 3 hours. And maybe one or two athletes can survive that. But I think two of us would agree in our experience and what we observe and what we've learned that the majority don't. So if you're with a coach and you have faith in them, follow the plan, Rennie. What do you think?
Yeah, I have a lot of personal buy into that. And most of my clients, like yours, buy into the fact that you don't need to go so long all the time either. And this is something I learned from a coach myself for the first marathon. So, because I think my longest was 28K, and because I still felt really good all the way to the end, for me, it was the proof in the pudding back then that, okay, to actually run a good marathon, you don't have to necessarily run 30 or 32K. 28 was enough as long as you were consistent with doing things. But of course, that's not enough that you take that and say, well, that's how you do it for everybody. Because what I get a lot of pushback with from, I have a lot of clients who fall into that 4 to 5.5 hour segment on, where it's really, it's nearly kind of, as I always say, it's a bit more like an ultra, because you're moving at what are relatively slow paces. And that means if I tell them, look, there's just no way you go over 2.5 hours, and I sometimes, I try my luck on, they just won't take it, because in their mind, the gap between 2.5 and what they're setting out to is just too big. And what is different there is that because you're moving at slower paces, it's less demanding in many ways. For starters, the intensity on the body is much lower. The problem is that it's still a lot of mechanical impact to go out and, kind of slow jog or walk run for 3.5 to 4.5 hours or whatever it is, that might make a, let's say a beginner feel ready to target a sub 5:30 marathon. So there we usually kind of play it a little bit by ear. I usually allow them one or two of these long run walks to try and break that mental barrier. So it's not a physical training. And then we try to really unload around it. But then we stay to your principle there, or as you articulated the principle, for the rest of it. And for the faster runners, I would stay more, I have some people where we allow them to go to 2:45, but that's a fairly small difference from the 2.5 hours. It depends a little bit on experience. But the reason is that obviously it's super compensation, as we know. That's the reason you can actually get away with it, is that the body builds in a buffer. So if you run 28K, your body builds in capacity for more than 28K. And if you run 32K, it builds, no one, well, only a few elites who have exhausted every option will do stuff like, 38K tempo, or you might see some Kenyan running a 45K over distance run. Might have people have heard of over distance runs. And that might work if you have exhausted every other possibility of getting better after a long career. But until then, you have to follow the principle. You have to get the most out of the least.
Absolutely, yeah.
If you can run a sub 3 hour marathon without ever running a long run over 2.5, why wouldn't you? So see how it goes first. Be consistent. Don't turn everyone into a long death march, because the injury risk is much bigger. As you, this is what you're referring to really on, is after 2.5 to 3 hours, the risk of injury is much higher than between 2 and 2.5 hours.
Yeah, I think that the phrase Rennie, that you're alluding to there from my banking days, maximum return from minimum investment. That's
Yes,
one of
that's
my
it. That's it.
key marathon philosophies, maximum return from minimum investment. And what I say to my guys, Rennie, when we're having this conversation is, if you want to go longer to 2 hours 40, 2 hours 45 and beyond at close to marathon pace, but I still need you to train on Monday, on Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday, maybe if they're running 6 days per week, or if they're running 4 days per week, I still need them to train next week and come back healthy for next weekend. And if you do a big run like that, there's a high chance that you won't. But then what I said to them is, but listen, on marathon race day, you'll be able to go to 42 kilometers because we don't need to run for 2 weeks after it. So we can go to the well and you will be able to reach that 42 kilometers and we can rest as much as we want. But because I need you back running next week, we need to have it controlled, because the most important thing is it's consistency. It's not one big outlier 36 kilometers, but we miss all the consistency. It's the consistency that's key, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that investment analogy is great, because it's the same. If you want a really big return on investment quickly, then you need to make a high risk investment, right? We all know that's the price. If you want to double your money tomorrow, well, whatever it is you're investing in, you might lose it all as well, very quickly. And that's how it works for marathon too. And that's, where a lot of, I think, maybe people, I don't know about you, Owen, but certainly for myself, greed was always the problem. Right, a little bit more, a little bit earlier, and then you make those, you add in, as you say, 7-10% where you shouldn't. For a lot of my clients, there's another big kind of underlying psychological factor. I'm not trying to be a psychologist by the way, because you know, we have much more complicated than just one thing. But as kind of a general observation on my part, uncertainty is another reason. You know, it's that feeling I haven't done enough. You know, so it's either I want more, that's the greed, or uncertainty, I'm not sure this is enough. You know, so you don't trust yourself enough because you're maybe stepping into the unknown, and you haven't had that experience I had back in 2007, that, oh, I can run a really fast marathon on 4 to 5, you know, days a week and 28K max. Because the moment you see it, you're like, oh yeah, okay then. It's not as hard as people make it out to be. And then you carry that with you for the rest of your life. But the first time you go into a marathon, you don't have that, you know. And if you have always kind of pushed yourself right to the limit, you know, if you've never tried to back off and say, let me see if I'm a little bit fresher, I might even feel I'm a little bit undercooked, whether I actually end up running a better marathon, like to trust that experiment and do it. Like if you've hit your head against the wall for many years, you know, chasing some elusive barrier, and you're always just about missing out, you always feel there's a few niggles, you're always a bit kind of beaten up by the time you get to the start line, or you feel like your muscles are trashed in the last 12K, just consider next time, maybe do less, you know, because maybe that has been the problem all along. You know, it's not about finding smarter workouts, it's not about doing more, it's just about doing what you're doing, you know, in a more clever way, you know, executed with a bit more control and intelligence.
Yes, not quite a leap of faith, but nearly ready for some people, myself included sometimes.
Yeah, hop of faith.
Okay, the fourth topic that we want to cover around you today is, again, not this isn't fueling for Sunday, because that should be all covered and hopefully everybody has their plan. But I think it's a great topic, because what I did realize running myself was that I was kind of taking it for granted that everybody, you know, these days knows to take a gel every half an hour. You know, that's certainly, I think, the approach that we would take now for a number of years now. But I was having conversations with people realizing, actually, are you practicing your gels every Sunday? Oh, no, I had a bad experience last year. Oh, no, actually, I must start to do that, Owen. Well, oh, absolutely, we need to start to do this. So, you know, a couple of times I nearly just fell into the conversation with people because I thought it was covered. But we do have to sometimes say it out loud, Rennie. That makes sure that you're fueling properly for your marathon tempo runs and your long runs. And not just to leave it to race day. And when you are practicing, practice like it is race day. So thankfully, I think everybody is covered. Hopefully everybody is covered, that they all have their gels ready to go every half an hour.
Yeah, I've taken to write much more detail about this than I used to. Because, as you say, that observation that people just, they really sometimes leave it to chance and they don't test it in enough of the, see, we want the specific things tested in the specific phase, you know, and we're not the only coaches who do that, obviously. But that means I don't write that when you're doing your winter training, right? During the winter training, generally for people's long runs, they don't eat much at all. A lot of them don't eat anything. They eat it afterwards because they're on early and all this. And that's great. You know, it can work well if you're used to it. But I had actually an athlete there this year, and she would have been used to basically never taking anything in her long runs, which in many ways is great because it makes her very self-sufficient, you know. But I said to her, look, you are trying to run a lot faster than you've done for a while, and you do seem to struggle a little bit with recovery. So I want to make sure for this specific phase, because you come from zero, I'm not going to give you 60 to 70 grams per hour. You know, I want you to go out and try a few different gels, 45 per hour at first. And then we slowly tapered it up every second week as we got into the specific period. And she did come back and say, wow. She said, I already felt much easier during, but the difference after, you know, was huge. And I think that shows that combination of, if you have a body that's metabolically flexible, because you generally are not, you don't always need constant fueling, you know, we don't want that either, you know, which is kind of like carb dependency. But then when you add it in a systematic way, then people can see with their own eyes, first of all, the difference, and they can allow their body, it doesn't take long, you know, it only takes 2 to 4 weeks. You can allow your body to respond to that increase in dosage, you know, from 45 to maybe 60, 70, depending on how fast you run, right? So that's something I try and look after with the guys, is that the slower ones have to, they can't consume at as high a rate because they're running at a lower intensity. You know, so they're not burning as much sugar. So if they take sugar at the rate of someone running a really fast marathon, by the time they're 3.5 hours in, they'll want to vomit probably. You know, so they need to slow it down a little bit. But the key is to get, you know, have a few progressive steps up to how you want to fuel on the day. So you need to clarify that, you know, 3 months out or so, and then slowly build it into at least every second of those long runs is what I do, Owen. I don't know. What do you do now?
With the long runs for my guys, Rennie, to be honest, I try and make sure that every weekend that they are actually getting their gels in and they're fueling properly. And I know there are positives to doing some of those long runs, especially the easier, relaxed ones fasted. But I just think because those final 10 weeks are so demanding on the body that I try and keep them all as fueled and as carbo loaded as I can. And again, it seems to work. You know, people aren't too knackered or exhausted coming into the taper because they're getting their fueling right. And maybe that's a nice segue, Rennie, for our next segment where we've kind of maybe observed some of the errors and mistakes that some of the guys make. But a lot of the guys have been doing really good things as well in training. I touched on a few of them that I observed, moving Sunday runs to Monday when needed, maybe avoiding racing and just concentrating on our marathon-specific pace sessions, fueling every weekend. And I know you had a couple of small changes, but certainly big gains from your guys as well.
Yeah, I actually kind of ended up talking about a lot of them already, just off script, you know. But like, for instance, as we said, with some of the runners who have fallen the kind of slower segment, you know, of the finishing times, those run walk long runs were a big change for them, you know, because it just reduced the strain and psychologically and physically on those runs an awful lot. And we saw then improvement with, you know, in proper, you could say proper non-stop runs a little bit later down the line. Like you know, generally we don't want to do any behaviors that make people accidentally under fuel. But I had some people who there are people who have trouble with, you could say, digestion in general, right? And they actually, or they had become too sugar dependent, you know. So they were always telling me they had issues on their runs, you know, with having to go to the toilet and things like that. And we actually sorted that the opposite way to what you do, not exactly opposite to what you said, but we actually dosed down their eating around the long run, and then we did it after, and that sorted a lot of the problems. But all that really means is that you really, the key is better feedback. You know, that's really where I think the biggest difference is in terms of making a plan better, is that whenever an issue occurs, that the communication is quick and honest, you know. And especially when people tell me that they're tired, or if they tell me that they think the pace of the runs isn't right, that's just so important, because some people don't. You know, I've noticed that over the years, they crack on for a week or two and everything kind of looks good. And then you've kind of lost those 2 weeks, where some of my clients this year have been brilliant at, you know, the moment anything didn't, you know, they weren't sure it was the right pace, they would be right on to me. And then we would look into it in a bit of detail to see why is it that it's not right, or it doesn't feel right. You know, sometimes it was because the accumulated fatigue makes paces seem harder, you know, even paces that on paper should be appropriate. And when you have a newer runner who, you know, doesn't know how to maybe deal with that situation, you can tell them then that, look, it's the key with a marathon build-up is that an easy run is actually easy. So you just need to do whatever you can then to dose it back. Don't worry about it. You know, don't feel that it shows that your whole marathon schedule is now off track because you can't hit the paces that I set out for you. You know, that's not how you should interpret it at all. So that's for me probably this cycle was the big one.
Okay, Rennie, we're an hour closer to start time on Sunday morning, 8:45 start. So let's begin to wrap this up so people can get back to their race preparation. Let's maybe finish off with a couple of rapid fire reflections. We can maybe bounce off each other here. I'll throw the first one over to yourself. Most common mistake, Rennie. You might have very well touched upon it already, but go for your most common mistake that you've observed.
Yeah, well, I was saying this one, you know, too much too soon, as in you run those easy runs too hard. But maybe related to that is not prioritizing the long run high enough. You know, is that you? Yeah, so you do the other runs so hard that it has an impact on that. That's one of the biggest issues I've seen, because and that needs to be corrected quickly before you've lost two or three of them.
Yeah, and I'll just go for the common one that we always talk about, Rennie, is doing the easy runs too hard. It's so important to have those positive loop cycles, which we've mentioned on the podcast many times. Of even if you do, say, a top end zone two run, the next day probably needs to be recovery zone one. So just to make sure that you respect that process. Next one, most underrated skill, Rennie, in as part of your marathon training. What do you think?
Yeah, so it's pacing discipline we've kind of already covered, which is that control. But so let's take recovery management, which is another one we see a lot. Because you can do the runs really great, but you don't look after yourself enough in your life. I see that a lot. You know, that's probably the main thing that holds people back now. You know, that you need to treat yourself properly outside of work. And if that means you need to sacrifice some commitments, then, you know, most people have something in their life that is actually, if you stop doing it, no one would come after you. You know, not your wife, not your boss, not someone else. You have to be honest about that and get rid of it, even if it's just for the marathon block. Because you need more time to sleep, you know, you need more time maybe to do some resistance training, or just to get your blood pressure down, more time to sit and eat relaxed, you know, so you could, that's the key, because otherwise you're doing all that work, but you're not getting the full return for it, so you could have done less.
Yeah, and I might just maybe finish off with one more, Rennie. Most underrated skill, or I might even change that word skill to most underrated asset that you can have in your back pocket in your marathon build-up. And for me, Rennie, it's strength conditioning. And you know, we can have all the aerobic capacity that we want, all the mental desire and mental strength that we have. But I'm sure you've observed it, and I've observed this with my own marathon running as well. Sometimes it's not that the aerobic capacity goes or the desire goes in the final 10 kilometers, but it might be a bit of a twinge in the hamstring or the calf muscle. And I think that just does come down to really just localized acute muscle strength. And I think we're all a little bit guilty of maybe slacking on that side a little bit because we make sure we tick all the boxes of the long runs, of the recovery runs, of the easy runs. But when we are marathon training, especially as we get faster, Manny, and especially if we want to do one every 6 months or every year, we do need to have probably a fixed day of the week where you do, excuse me, where you do that hour of strength and conditioning work. And even as a coach, Manny, it's something that I'm going to be more and more strict on with my athletes over the coming years as well, is that, listen, guys, if we want to be doing marathons every 6 months or every year, we need to have this actually in training peaks on a particular day so that muscular endurance is there for the final 10 kilometers.
Yeah, we've talked about like muscular health is becoming a big topic and one we'll really cover a lot in the autumn, I think. But I too am getting much more strict with people on instead, because it's I see I know after all these years when a training plan is not wild, and I know that our training plans are not wild, and still we see very often small niggles. It's very rare that it's a big serious, you know, you're going to be out for 6 months. It's very, very rare. It's
Yeah,
just a little
true.
thing, you know, it's a little calf, a little hamstring, and it just takes 2 weeks here or 1.5 weeks there. And it's nearly always because of those two things we've kind of just hammered home in this podcast, not recovering sufficiently for even that reasonable workload, or not looking after the body in the other way, as in the muscular way, the mobility way, you know, relying on running to provide all of your body's fitness needs, and that's not reasonable. You know, that's just not going to happen unless you're super young and super fit. So definitely, it's if you want seriously to keep doing it, even if you want to just do one and you want to do it best, you have to, in a way, say that has to be part of it. And if it's not part of it, then I have to rely on being a freak physically, or really, really lucky. And do you really want to rely on that?
Rene, brilliant stuff as always. I really enjoyed that. It was fantastic. And maybe just a quick summary. I think make sure that you have your life set up and as planned as you can, as regular as it can be, so you can plan for that big marathon or that big ultra. Make sure that we're racing for realistic rhythms, realistic paces, as opposed to what we would like to do, or maybe what we would like to do when we were in our 20s, but now we're in our 40s or we're in our 50s. Make sure you're practicing fueling and recovery as the weeks go by, not just leaving it to the final weekend. And trust the process, trust the coach, and make sure that you have those positive feedback loops going over the course of the week. Rennie, it's been brilliant to chat to you for our traditional Dublin Marathon build-up. And Rennie, I'll leave the final word to yourself.
Just, I hope to see some of our listeners out there. The plan is that myself and my kids will be out along the route, cheering on, obviously, my wife, but some other runners as well. So, yeah, who knows? If you do see us, feel free. We'll try and give you a wave if we recognize you. And, you know, I hope it goes great for everyone.
Brilliant, Rennie. Thanks a million. It's going to be a great, great Sunday morning. I'll probably be watching it on YouTube. I'm going to set up a little kind of operation center here in my living room with everybody's target times, their times as they move through the halfway stage, their finishing time, and hopefully lots of PBs. And then we're into the lottery system, Rennie, for 2026. There's no more guaranteed sign-ups. We'll be in the lottery like everybody else. Rennie, have a super time on Sunday morning, and we'll talk to you in a week or two.
All right, see you all. Cheers, fella. Bye.
Well, there we have it, guys. Hope you enjoyed that chat with Rene. And again, best of luck to you all on Sunday. And especially, of course, to our regular mountain and trail running listeners who are maybe coming down off the trails for a lap of Dublin City. And if you are new to the podcast and listening in for the first time, thanks a million for tuning in. And we do have a very good coaching segment with great racing and training tips every fortnight with Rene from Running Coach Ireland. And then we try and follow that up with some inspiring chats with some of the very best Irish mountain and trail runners out there. But for now, let's get ready for the 2025 Dublin City Marathon and those 26 miles. Have a brilliant race, everybody. Execute that strategy to the best of your ability and have lots of fun. This is a special day for the running community in Ireland. And a quick reminder before I go to use that code FUELUP, uppercase or lowercase, for 10% off all of your sports nutrition and sports supplements needs on the Irish store, newleafonline.ie, where mountain runner and UTMB finisher Mairead and the team will be more than happy to help you out. Everybody, get your running gear on. Let's go.